wouldn't be hard now, it's, you know, the same few words, that's what they ran for.
Growing up, my grandfather always taught us that never feel tougher than the kids. And we didn't. My father had so many amazing qualities. He was warm, he was fearless, he cherished his family, he devoted himself to his community. He truly experienced life. And for all those reasons and more, he inspired me. But when I think about my father, I think about him. He made me fearless. He had the most incredible abilities. He made me feel safe, protected, loved, cared for. When a child is young, she often perceives the parents as being invincible and capable of fixing anything. Even as an adult, that's what I thought of father. He had the most positive attitude. There was nothing that he felt was insurmountable. No problem he felt was unsolvable. And he made me believe that too. No matter what, everything would be okay. It takes a special type of person with a strong spirit to view the world with such positivity and appreciation. And it takes an even more unique person to help others to see the world in that light. One of the many ways that my coffee impacted my life is by instilling me such an appreciation. Not only did he instill in me love of life, but he taught me value relationships. Talk to me, befriend everybody. People who could easily have been mere acquaintances became his lifelong friends. That ability to connect with people and to make them feel like they were significant to him was one of the qualities about my pastor that I most respect. I consider myself so blessed to have grown up with my pastor as such a prominent figure in my life. It helps that we were just a buck away from him. It's so easy to take that for granted, but I realize how lucky we are that he always was so present. It is so difficult to sum up such a special moment in just a few words. It is even more difficult to convey the very special relationship that I had with my father. The grandparent is no doubt a significant figure in Sydney's life. The pastor wasn't just a figure in my life. We share our life with him. He was a part of every moment, event, week, day. Going down to Pastor's house was virtually an everyday occurrence. Dr. Meyer went home on the way out just to say hi. We spent every holiday together at the city ride together for Shabbat. When I went away to college, then law school, and then New York. I was even before the airport without stopping by to say bye to Pastor. He was such a part of my everyday life, and I'm so blessed to have had that closeness with such an incredible person. I learned so much from him. I not only credit him with our love of family, community, and tradition, but also with our love of spicy food, clothing, toddling, and fun. There is nothing that he loved more than to be outside on a hot summer day, basking in the sun, surrounded by his family. That is how I will forever remember him. So wonderful.
A couple of years ago, I remember watching a video watching a video of me when I was like 2 years old. I thought it was coming to me, and I remember thinking to myself, I heard his voice, and it was such a strength to his voice. He had the strength of his voice of a young man. He was like 40, he was like 70, I was born, I was about 7 years old. And I remember thinking that, in a way, I thought to myself, that was always how Papu really was. He was someone with such incredible energy. And he brought that to everything that he did. He was always someone who brought such lightness to every event, to every place that he went. And I would go down to his house in the summer, or what he likes to call work parties. And we would, I would work out on one arm and rebuild things. But he would always get his hands dirty, and he was always very hands-on with him. No matter how old he got, even his age, he was still doing that. I remember the last time, a few times he'd done that, he would always try to step in and do what he should. The guy would always tell me to kind of just make sure that he stepped off a little bit and to make sure that I wasn't ever not paying attention to the feet. He would always be hands-on, even when he shouldn't be. But that's always how Papu was, and he was always someone, even in the past few years, when I got to go over and, when he was getting older, he would light up when he was signing and stuff, and we would make him happy, and that always lit up. I read a book recently, it had a big impact on me, called Answers for Meaning, and one of the questions that was asked in the book is, what makes the difference between somebody who gives up and somebody who holds on? I think that, and what's said in the book is that somebody can hold on and something to hold on to. And Papu had so much to hold on to. He had so much love for so many people loved him. And he hung on because he had such a love for life, he had such a love for people, and he made everyone around him feel so special, always. And there was, it was just an endless stream of love, really. And it's something that I can't imagine anyone else that I know having kind of a father or puppy. And one more thing is that I said in the Shema, which is a system in the Torah that we read in the morning, it says that to paraphrase, it says that Mitzvot lengthen the days, your days, and lengthen the days of your children's. Laman, if you believe in him, then you can split stake at lengthen your days and days of your children. And I really feel deeply that Papu did that because when you were with him, he really made time stand still. And you were with him, he wasn't with anybody else. It was you and you alone, and he filled his time with you. When you were there, it was your time, you were his focus, and he would make you feel so loved, and it filled you with such a sense of love. And if I can carry a little bit of that for the rest of my life, then I would have lived my life with him, and I have nothing to thank for that.
Now I'll call Simon Hamill and Joel Habit to say a few words.
I should apologize in advance, but this certainly
support. Outside of my mother and my father, the most influential person in our lives was our grandfather. We were at my grandpa and grandma's home at least once a week for Shabbat dinner, sleepovers, Sunday afternoon fishing, and boat rides. We went to for holidays, Passover, Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, and we were there for other special events like birthdays and anniversaries. And every single time we were with our grandpa, we knew that the most important thing in his life, above all else, is family. He made us feel special and important and loved. Every visit with our grandpa started with what's called a crusher. It's a hug that's about 2 to 3 times the normal crusher. And we would ask him, "How are you, Grandpa?" And he would respond, "I'm great, now that you're here." And at various points throughout the visit, he would remind us that he was the luckiest man in the world. Our grandpa was a beautiful man. For me, the window to that beauty, who my grandpa was and what mattered to him, could be seen through his fingers, his eyes, and his heart. The same fingers he used to sometimes do like cinch up back pressure. Put the hands together and kind of pull you in a little more. You need a little more torque on the crusher. So those same hands, he loved to tell my sister that when we were little, we just right in there. Because it's right there. And those fingers would steer the boat on beautiful Seattle summer days. They would loop a worm on a fishing hook and pick up crumbs off the table for the floor. And in fact, I was there last Sunday, and my grandma and I are helping my grandpa up the stairs. He can hardly walk, but he takes a second to bend over and pick up some lint off the floor. His fingers, with so much character, rolled the dice in literally thousands of games back when he played. His fingers could fix anything and everything around the house, even if it meant diving under the dock in the middle of a winter storm to fix something that most definitely could have waited until the spring, but was well worth the blood gash on his forehead to get it fixed today. Those fingers that were so strong could also be tender. They would deliver a bouquet of flowers to my grandma every Friday for Shabbat. They would hold the spoon to scoop up ice cream, which we'll come back to in a little bit. But those fingers would hand out Hershey's candy bars to the kids who would lovingly call him the candy man. Then there were his eyes. His eyes radiated this childlike wonder and love. And I really feel like I've seen my grandpa when he was just a kid, when he would tell me about one of my favorite stories about the Happy Winky Dance. This was a neighborhood club that he started, and as he would talk about it, I would see his eyes just light up, and it was like looking at my grandpa had seen him when he was back in elementary school, especially when he would mention Martin. This really nice lady, you would say, who lived down the block, who, along with Uncle Bill, was a voluntary member of the Happy Rinky Dinks for the price of a diamond. Now, how Marge came upon those dimes was a different story. She was never married. She always had a steady flow of men in her place. In fact, my grandpa used to like to say how the cable car conductor would stop in once, maybe twice a day. And a smile and those eyes just lighting up when he would tell that story. The Happy Rinky Dinks were lucky to have Margie and Uncle Bill as honorary members. I loved watching his eyes.
I loved watching his eyes as he looked at his family, his kids, grandkids, and great-grandkids. His look of pure joy. I looked at the excitement in my daughter's eyes. Sophia and Nora, my new blow-up pool in the backyard. And I look back at my grandpa's eyes and see the exact same child that's in there. I'm so thankful that he got to spend time with my girls, and my girls got to spend time with him.
And there was one time when I couldn't see his eyes, but I have a pretty good idea of how they look. Each year in the fall, my grandma and grandpa would take us and our cousins to the pumpkin patch. And one year on the way home, we stopped off at McDonald's. And a few moments in, we hear over the loudspeaker, "Everybody, please remain calm and get down on your hands and knees." And this McDonald's was being robbed. And before I knew it, we saw my grandpa. And he was crawling across the floor and to the side door just in time to see the getaway car zoom by. And as a kid, this wasn't scary, this was actually kind of exciting. And like my grandpa, I thought it was exciting too. He always, his eyes had the same light in them that they always had when he was at the center of the action. And his heart, a heart that was so big, it kept him alive far longer than his literal heart could. His heart gave him trouble for over 20 years. There were times we thought we were going to lose him. But it was his heart and the love that radiated from it that kept him going. And he felt that love every time we were with him. Everyone felt that love when he was in the room. That's why people love doing things for him, and he was never one to pass up on someone doing a nice thing for him. And so it was through those fingers and those eyes and the heart that we learned important life lessons, all positive things. He got a knack for taking what seemed like a negative and shifting it to a positive. If we lost to him in back end, he would reassure us, never feel bad about losing to the best. Now on the flip side, if we beat him in back end, he would reassure himself, there's no shame. And actually, it's the best compliment you can pay your teacher to have the people win. If there were things around the house that we were fixing, we didn't come over to do work like Alex said, we had a work party. He didn't say this outright, but I'm sure after the McDonald's incident, he didn't lament it as some life-threatening ordeal. He would say, if you ever have a chance to go to McDonald's while it's getting robbed at gunpoint, do it, because afterwards, you get free fries and soda. He taught me that when you're at the beach, and if a woman walks by, stuffing your stomach, puff out your chest. He taught us that ice cream is an elixir. It will cure everything, headaches, stomach aches, everything. So you can have it anytime, breakfast, lunch, or dinner. He taught us that you can be a leader. You can be the boss without making others feel like they're being bossed. He taught us to love and also to be loved. He taught us to hug and kiss the people in your life, when you greet them, when you say goodbye, and at any time in between. He taught us to respect our elders. He taught us that no matter what time of day it is, it's good to share a drink with a loved one. He taught us to take joy in being a kid, even in adulthood. He taught us to care for and protect our community. He taught us to live and love big. He taught us that you're never too old to give grandpa a kiss.
He taught us to welcome new people into our family. I'm so grateful for how warm and loving he was, making my husband Warren still part of our family. My grandpa probably already saw in his family. He would tell stories of Warren's great grandpa and all the great times he had with his best friend growing up, Louis Cohen, who is Warren's grandpa. The biggest lesson he taught us is the most important thing in life is family. We want to say a very special thanks to Uncle David, to Mom Leah, and John Wayne and Dad Barry for doing so much to care for Grandpa through his life, especially for the end, and things were particularly challenging. You're a phenomenal example to us both. And the biggest thank you of all goes to our grandmothers, Grandma, for patience and love and generosity. But he told the end of Grandpa's mind was going and he could be temperamental. Love and truth was standing. You also brought your kids and your families into our lives. In Mexico, the old church in the fortnight. We've all enjoyed so many fun times together, especially our trip to Lake Chelan for your 76th birthday. We love you, Grandma, and we are all of you.
We look forward to seeing you at my grandpa's house throughout this week for a party out of the working variety. And having you all here at the synagogue and at the house you treasure, our grandpa's family and friends would have prompted our grandpa to say he's the luckiest man alive. But as his grandkids, we were even luckier to be able to call him our grandpa.
Mallory, we're here from Cookie Fight with Mallory. Mallory Portnoy, Samantha Searles, Hannah Musketail, Trapper Searles, Zach and Joey Alchek, Jamie Searles, and Bob Musketail.
Though he was technically our step-grandpa, he certainly never felt that way. He was always his grandpa since he was part of our family since all of us were born. Growing up in Grandpa's house was always a treat as a kid. We were greeted with a strong hug, a big kiss on the lips, and a high bow. We were fed breakfast and boys for days. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. And we always got to go for a ride on a boat or play in the lake. What more could a kid want? Because of him, our already wonderful family unit doubled, and we were blessed with even more amazing cousins and aunts and uncles. He even exposed us to a side of Judaism we otherwise may not have known much about. And most importantly, he made our grandma cookie the happiest Valentine. Whether teaching us to play backgammon, though never showing us how to win, boarding the latest J.D. West hoodie, trying to find our tickler, which apparently is code word for belly button, cruising on his Shabbat mobile, or peeing in the lake while fishing with his grandson. We'll save the rest of that story for the reception if you're interested. He will forever remain our grandpa. A little guy, handsome as a devil, and as mighty as Mount Rainier. Most of us were fortunate enough to be present for his last Shabbat dinner on Friday night. He was live as ever, and Dr. gave a final cheers to us and enjoyed his night sipping on his favorite, Crown Royal. So cheers to you, Grandpa. We love you.
Maybe we have to figure on one word that would describe Elijah Dion and look at his life in the context of the Seattle Jewish community and the target community is that Elijah was a legend. He was a legend. And he was an opportunity to eulogize a person of his stature. He was very fortunate indeed. The number of rabbis who could not be with us here today asked to express their thoughts about the relationship with Elazar. So I'm going to be reading some words from Rabbi Solomon Cohen Scully and from my Rabbi Mark Angel. Rabbi Cohen Scully writes the following. In July 2001, I arrived with my family in Seattle to take the position of Rabbi of the Ezra Becerra congregation. We were fearful and concerned with what to expect in our new home in such a new environment, a new job, new people, new language, so far away from the safety and security of our family and friends. I have a very fond memory of our first days in Seattle, especially the people who made us realize there was nothing to fear. We were coming home to be among real friends, to become part of a big family. One such person, whom I'll always hold in my heart forever, was Elazar Bihar. He really became like a mentor and a father figure to me. I have to say that I had been warned about Elazar's toughness, but I found in him only affection, care, generosity, and the best advice, I pronounce it correctly, Horm's Bagels. Is that correct? We shared so much. We had so much in common. He was an example of Torah Emet al-Lishono, a person who had an uncompromising approach to the truth. And that can be appreciated when it came to our love for our Sephardic heritage, our love for our Spanish language, our love for Ezra the Seraph. The so-called toughness probably showed in both of us when it came to what we understood was in the best interest of our tradition or our pride. I've been so aware of where we came from. The smile when he showed me in the Kilah, it was passed on to his family for generations, and he believed it was written in Toledo in the Middle Ages, or when he gifted me with some precious books in Latino, or when we had coffee at Joel's with our friend Bill Apple, how proud he always was to have anything Jewish or Sephardic. He was an example of Chokmah, Binah, Dadat, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. I learned so much from him, so many things you'll never find in the books or hear in any shiur or any yeshiva. He introduced me to so many of you whom later become so dear to me. He knew how to use his connections to help me break the ice, especially with those of you who thought, quote, how can you hire a rabbi with such an accent? I had my first encounter with many of you at his home over a drink, and that did it. He did it at the beginning because we understood it was in the benefit of EB, but later I know he and I were much more than just working together. We were real friends, and I can see even more, we became a family. Elazar was also an example of Kavod HaTorah and Kavod HaChachamim. He had respect for the Torah, respect for rabbis. I say it from my own experience and how I witnessed his relationships with other rabbis like Rabbi Shalem. I'm sure he and Rabbi Shalem are going to start something like a Ladino Shir or an Ezra Becerra branch together up there now. Elazar was small in his physical body, but a giant in the mark that he leaves in so many people. I met many people in many places I work. Very few, if any, have impacted me the way he has. Ki Adam Eitz HaSadeh, for man is like a tree of the field. I always mention the tree as the allegory of a good Jew. Deep roots, straight trunk, long branches, No one embodies the idea better than Eliza. My dear David, I am heartbroken I cannot be there with you and Leah and the rest of the family. As usual, Eliza was such a special character. That we even planned this day long ago, it was always clear that I would be there eulogizing him. But a shame has put me at this time in my life to Lima, Peru, which simply makes it physically impossible to be there on time. Eleazar, you know that my heart is sore with you. David, as many fruits this tree has produced, you are the finest. The measure of your fulfillment of the mitzvah, of kibbutz, of the aim of honoring parents, is really unparalleled. His face would shine always in telling me how blessed he considers himself because of his children. Today, not only the PR family enter the seraphim mourning, but the entire community, as we say farewell to the most dignified representative of an entire generation, of a culture and a way of life, a true, excuse my pronunciation, one of us. And then I coincidentally quoted a Spanish line, which I'm not going to attempt even, but it reads, when friend leaves, a little bit of us leaves with him. Raquel, my family, and I will sort of miss a lover. I will always have him and his wife present with me. Tiani Shantot, Surab, and Surab, Kahim, Sultoya, and Emelidim, our love to be our family. That was another coincidentally words. Now, words from under Mark Angel, of course, Seattle native, Rabbi Meredith of Sheriff Israel Synagogue in New York. Rabbi Angel writes as follows. I write these words of eulogy in New York being able to be with you in Seattle for the funeral of the Lazar Zichron. I write with a heavy heart. Lazar was a lifelong friend, and I, along with all of you, feel a profound sense of loss. For most of us, Lazar was Ezra the Seraph. His devotion to the community knew no bounds. His love of the traditions, inherited from his revered father, Reverend David Meir, was the bedrock of his religious life. I extend sincere condolences to the entire family. May the Almighty comfort you with his many wonderful memories of Lazar's life. The name of Lazar means God helps. Indeed, God helps our Lazar to live a long and blessed life with a beautiful, devoted, and loving family. The first of Lazar in our tradition was Lazar, the son of Aaron, the high priest, and he lived in the days of Moses. Eleazar became the high priest upon the death of his father. He was known for his meticulous attention to the rituals of the sanctuary. He carried himself with great dignity. He fulfilled his service to God with love, with a sense of responsibility for all Israel. Our Eleazar, being our son, we followed the model of that first Eleazar. Who of us can even imagine Ezra the Seraph without Eleazar? Who was always there for us, not only as a Gabbai, but as a genuine friend? Who cared about the synagogue ritual with the same love and sensitivity as our Eleazar. There is a phrase in the Jewish tradition describing how we feel when we've lost a pillar of our community called Dor Yatom, an orphaned generation. With the passing of Eleazar, we are at the edge of the Seraph community, and as a Jewish community at large, have become orphans. We've lost someone who is impossible to replace. Jewish tradition tells of another great Eleazar, Rabbi Eleazar ben Azariah. He was kind, he was a wise and beloved leader. At a young age, his colleagues appointed him as head of the Rabbinic Academy in Yavne, and he immediately attracted hundreds of new students. His philosophy was, open the doors, encourage participation, be welcoming. Rabbi Eleazar ben Azariah praised those who perform good deeds and who seem to have even greater than their wisdom. He taught that a person in meritorious action was a strong person. Even should all the winds of heaven rage against him, they could not move him from his place. And it wasn't our love to be our kind, wise, beloved leader. He was respected by all. He wanted as many people as possible to benefit the synagogue and its services. He served not only with diligence, but with enthusiasm. Who of us can forget his beautiful tender voice, walking about all the voices as a congregation sang his prayers? Who can forget the energy of Lazar's blowing of the shofar? He was a strong, determined man, but also a kind and gentleman. During the course of his lifetime, he met many storms in life, but he was strong. All the winds of heaven could not move him from his place. He strove, he overcame difficulties, he had inner strength reserved for a very few outstanding individuals. Let me cite one other famous Elazar from our tradition, Rabbi Elazar ben Arach. His teacher was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan asked his students to come up with the most important qualities a person should have. Rabbi Elazar ben Arach provided the answer that found favor in his teacher's eyes, and that was a lev tov, a good heart. Our Elazar had a lev tov. He was generous, he was thoughtful. His heart overflowed with love for his beloved family. He was loved and revered by them because he truly and genuinely loved and revered them. Somehow Elazar seemed to be a person who just couldn't die. He was a fixture in our lives, a source of stability, continuity, of permanence. We have depended on him and learned from him going back so many years. We can scarcely imagine life without his guiding presence. Elazar set the standard for us, and he showed us the way. His greatest hope would be for his family and his community to grow and prosper. We want all of us to gain inspiration from his life and take his inspiration to help us live better, happier, and stronger lives. Like Elazar, the high priest, we would want us to be highly devoted to the beautiful and historic traditions of the synagogue. Like Elazar ben Azariah, we would want us not just to say nice words, but to perform wonderful deeds, to be strong, very strong individuals. Like Rabbi Elazar ben Arach, who would want us to live generously and kindly, marked by a lev tov, good hearts, compassionate spirits. The Hebrew word Elazar means God helps, and indeed God bless Elazar ben Arach in so many ways. But in a sense, we should also understand the name Elazar to mean that Elazar was God's helper. He worked to make the world a better place. He strove to raise and inspire an honorable and honored family. He made the synagogue the center of his spiritual life, and he made a vast and incalculable difference in the lives of so many people. Elazar, Elazar, we will miss you. We are now a Dor Yatom, an orphan generation. Without you, we begin a new era. But I assure you, in this new era, your voice and your spirit will always be there to guide us. Rest in peace, Elazar. I remark in joy. I wanted to say a few words, but what can I say after hearing the grandchildren and the other rabbis? I just want to share with you some thoughts I had after talking to Aaliyah, David, and Koki yesterday. Perhaps a perspective from the children, the family, and Koki, who was a loveless in 1979, and her family became his family. There are many great stories, terrific stories. I want to start with the vision that Leah gave me, how he taught me how to dance, right? I do it with my kids. I don't know how to dance, but it's a good first step. You put your feet on his feet, and you walk around there with you. And I thought that captured the essence of who he was. We have a mitzvah in the Torah, the halakha, the bracha, you have to go with God's ways. And basically, it boils down to emulating God. There's no greater leader in the world than the master of the universe. And perhaps if we were to sum up Elazar's life, that quality of leadership stands out more than anything else. So whether it was teaching Leah how to dance, or the various other stories, and I just finished the Esoteric History book, and I see that Orville's here. I know how close Orville was with Elazar. And two personalities that stand out amongst the many great people in the history of the congregation are Orville, a man that exchanged with 120 good health, and Elazar, a blessed memory. And leadership. God wants us to be leaders. At the same time, he wants us to be prayerful people who are connected to him spiritually. And sounding like our main goal should be to engage in the internal, into spiritual development, to cultivate our spirituality. How does one bring the two together? And Elazar's interpretation of that was the way that he is going to be spiritual and going to be impactful on the world is to take the messages that he learned in the Kaaba here at the Sarah to take off with all the painting and all the shenanigans. And take that into the world. And everything he did sprouted from His life here as a desert. Because the kids there, early on, became devoted members of the congregation, worked for the congregation. But he was a leader in everything that he did. Just a few examples, a few stories about Lunder and his leadership. The first one is probably best reflected in the game that the children visited there and played for many years here in the sanctuary. Many of you are nodding, but many of you are guilty of that game. It was called Captain Lunder. In this game, it was sort of like a hide and seek kind of a game, or a tag. Child would sit at the table and he'd be, or she'd be Captain Lunder. I didn't approve how ethical this game is to back on the ground. And the kids would hide in places in the sanctuary. And they would try to escape the view of Captain Lunder. And even the name of the game just shows you the perception that the young folks had of the Lunder the Young. He was the captain. He wasn't just a gabbai. Gabbai is a ritual term of what he does as a tevah, but he was a captain of the ship. And that sense of leadership was something that everybody who knew him sensed. Even the pilots and the stewardesses, the flight attendants, on a flight that was diverted. Remember, was that 20 years ago? When it was diverted to Palm Springs. And Cookie and Lunder had a chest full of kosher food they were taking to be part of the camping trip they were going on. And when the plane was diverted, Lunder was in front and marched everybody off the plane, sent them up in hotels and motels in the area, and marched them back to the plane. It was redirected to the destination. But Cookie said that she couldn't find, she didn't know where the chest had all the food. And one of them seemed to have been lost, seemed to escape Lunder's control, but in fact, he's gone to destination. The chef told kosher food is still intact. The Lunder had somehow arranged for everything to happen as everybody was headed towards the hotel. He was a leader. He led the captain. He led the pilot off the plane. David tells a story that when he started working with his dad, that it wasn't that some Lebanese men who were interested in investing in Seattle real estate. Lunder walked up to them. He was a person of relationships in the 1980s, early 1980s. So this guy had interested in entering into Lebanon because, of course, the B.R. family, Reverend B.R., from Lebanon. And he wanted to see if he could sort of combine a trip, a business trip, with visiting the graves of his ancestors in Lebanon. So in 1980, Lunder B.R. went to Beirut. He was picked up by an armed escort through various checkpoints to a luxury hotel. And then, as David reports, all heck broke loose at the hotel, and there was a massive attack and shooting at the hotel. Contacted their cousin in Montreal, Jacques and Teddy in Montreal, interesting last name. They tried to locate Lunder, who was really unable to be reached for 24 hours. It turned out in the end, Lunder had befriended the right armed men, who eventually escorted him to an airfield and from there he flew safely to Germany. The classic Lunder was a cruise that the family went on. And I think the Lunder took you with on the cruise actually, and there was a game that they played on the cruise, and that was that they threw silverware into a pool. And the person who came up with the most pieces of silverware would win the contest. So Lunder, being an adventurous person, sense of leadership and determination, dove into the pool. He was down there for 15 seconds, for 20 seconds, for 30 seconds, and he wasn't coming up. And he turned to Cookie and he said, "Is everything okay?" She said, "He's okay. Maybe he's not coming up. He's not coming up until he's gotten every last piece of cutlery, silverware from the bottom of the pool." And so it was, jumping all the pieces of cutlery. This is a person who could do everything. And in the last years of his life, at Lexington, that sense came to him. That sense that he could do everything started frustrating him because physically he wasn't able to do everything. But to the very last moment, he made an effort, and his greatest joy was coming to the Kivah, coming to the Seraph of Shabbat, and he availed himself of halakhic technology, his little
but also the scooter to come uphill and to come to the DUR and to maintain the integrity of the Zoom for Shabbat, state time. And when he saw us, he was able to come to the DUR for Shabbat. Every time I saw him, every time I came over from the sculptures and concrete, he would say, he has to get back here. He has to be here. And not being here was a source of tremendous frustration and pain for him. But our sages tell us if a person wants to do a mitzvah and they're unable to do a mitzvah, they get the credit of the mitzvah. Because the essence of a person is their intention, their heart, and whenever they can, they try to act it out in their actions, they try to manifest their actions, but when you're unable to do something, you still get the sahar instead of the merit of the mitzvah. That was what was our last year of his life. This is a very sad day for everybody. It's not a tragic day, because a lot of those 93 years, it's a very, very sad day. And it's very fitting that we have the tributes of the grandchildren, the tributes from the other rabbis. I'm sure anybody who talks is here can have their own stories about Lazar and the impact that he made on the person and the family and the community. The Chatzol Beit HaMeidan, we will now conclude with the Kiddush Kadim. And when we leave the sanctuary, we're going to follow behind the Karim Hearse on the way to Spartan Brotherhood Cemetery. The Spartan Brotherhood officers and members are here. They expect the Dakah for Yushin.